the newcomer to the creature. "And I am still master. Go." His voice was like snow at midnight. The dead thing on the bed cowered back, wailing. The shadows on the wall seemed to rise up in clamorous fury, growling.
"No, ignore him. He is nothing. I am master. Take her. Take."
Basia felt the skin of her hand split and blood drip to the floor. She knew a fierce exultation.
"Go,"
she said to the dead thing, as though she had always known the words.
"By my blood, you are barred from this place."
She curled her hand round the hand that held hers, felt it slick with her blood. For an instant, the other hand felt real, cold and hard. She shuddered and turned to look, but there was no one there. The shadows on the wall seemed suddenly to shrink, quivering, crying out, and the dead creature's lips writhed back over long, thin teeth. It shrieked at Vasya, turned, and made for the window. It gained the sill, dropped into the snow, and bounded for the woods, faster than a running horse, the tangled, filthy hair streaming out behind. Vasya did not see it go. She was already at the bed, pulling away the filthy blankets, looking for the wound on the priest's naked throat. The voice of God had not spoken to Konstantin Nikonovich that evening. The priest had prayed alone, hour after hour, but his thoughts would not settle on the well-worn words.
"Vasilisa is wrong," Konstantin had thought. "What is a little fear if it saves their souls?"
He'd almost gone back to the kitchen to tell her so, but he was weary and stayed in his room, kneeling, even after it grew too dark to see the peeling gold on the icon. Just before moonrise, he went to bed and dreamed. In his dream, the gentle-eyed virgin stepped down from her wooden panel. An unearthly light was in her face. She smiled. More than anything, he wanted to feel her hand on his face, to have her blessing. She bent over him, but it was not her hand he felt. Her mouth grazed his forehead, touched his eyes. Then she put a finger under his chin, and her mouth found his. She kissed him again and again. Even dreaming, shame warred with desire. Feebly he tried to push her away, but the blue robes were heavy. Her body was like a coal against his. At last he yielded, turning his face to hers with a groan of despair. She smiled against his mouth, as though his anguish pleased her. Her mouth darted down to his throat with the speed of a stooping hawk. Then she shrieked, and Konstantin jerked awake, pinned beneath a quivering weight. The priest took a full breath and gagged. The woman hissed and rolled off him. He caught a glimpse of matted hair, that half-hid eyes like rubies. The creature made for the window. He saw two other figures in his room, one limbed in blue, the other dark. The blue shape reached for him. Weakly, Konstantin groped for the cross about his neck. But the blue-lit face was Vasilisa Petrovna's, an icon in itself. All hard angles and huge eyes. Their eyes met for a moment, his wide with shock, and then her hands went to his throat, and he fainted. He was not hurt. His throat and arm and breast were unmarked. So much Vasya felt, groping in the dark, and then a hammering came on the door. Vasya sprang for the window and half fell into the dvor. The moon shone over the snowy yard. She dropped to earth and crouched in the shadow of the house, shaking with cold and the aftermath of terror. She heard men burst into the room and pull up short. Clinging with both hands, Vasya was just tall enough to peer over Konstantin's sill. The room stank of decay. The priest sat bolt upright, clutching his neck. Vasya's father stood over him, holding a lantern.
"Are you all right, Batyushka?" Pyotr said. "We heard the cry."
Yes, replied Konstantin, faltering, wild-eyed.
"Yes, forgive me. I must have cried out in my sleep." The men in the doorway looked at each other.
The ice broke, said Constantine.
He climbed out of bed and staggered as he found his feet.
The cold gave me bad dreams.
Vasya ducked hastily as their pale faces turned toward her hiding place. She crouched in the shadow of the house beneath the window, trying not to breathe. She heard her father grunt and stride across to the broken casement, where the whole block of ice had fallen away. The shadow of his head and shoulders fell over her as he leaned warily into the door. Blessedly, he did not look down. Nothing moved in the dooryard. Then Pyotr drew the shutters closed and placed a wedge between. But Vasya did not hear it. The instant the shutters closed, she was sprinting silently for the winter kitchen. The kitchen was warm and dark, womb-like. Vasya slipped softly through the door. She ached in every limb.
Vasya? Alyosha said.
Vasya clambered atop the oven. Alyosha knelt up beside her.
It's all right, Dunya, said Vasya, taking her nurse's hands. You will be all right now. We are safe.
Dunya opened her eyes. A smile touched her shrunken mouth.
Marina will be proud, my Vasochka, she said. I will tell her when I see her.
You will do nothing of the kind, said Vasya. She tried to smile, though her eyes blurred with tears.
We're going to get well again.
At that, the old lady lifted a cold hand and, with surprising firmness, pushed Vasya away.
No, I am not, she said with a little of her old tartness. I have lived to see all of my little ones grown, and I want nothing more than to die with my last three children on either side.
Irina was awake now too, and Dunya's other hand reached out and found hers. Alyosha laid his hand over them all. He spoke up before Vasya could protest.
Vasya, she's right, he said. You must let her go. It will be a cruel winter, and she is weary.
Vasya shook her head, but her hand wavered.
Please, my darling, whispered the old lady. I am so tired.
Vasya hesitated for a frozen moment, then tipped her head in a tiny nod. The old lady laboriously freed her other hand and clasped Vasya's in both of hers.
Your mother blessed you at her parting, and now I do the same. Be at peace.
She paused as though listening.
You must remember the old stories. Make a stake of rowan wood. Vasya, be wary. Be brave.
Her hand fell away, and she lay silent. Irina and Alyosha and Vasya were left to pick up her cold hands, straining to hear the sound of her breathing. Finally, Dunya roused herself and spoke again, so low that they had to lean close to catch the words.
Lyoshka, she whispered, will you sing for me?
Of course, whispered Alyosha. He hesitated, then drew a deep breath.
There was a time not long ago when flowers grew all year, when days were long and nights star-strewn, and men lived free from fear.
Dunya smiled. Her eyes glowed like a child's, and in her smile, Vasya saw the shadow of the girl she had been.
But seasons turn and seasons change. The wind blows from the south, the fires come, the storms, the spears, the sorrow and the dark.
A wind was rising without, a cold wind that portends snow. But the three atop the oven sat insensible. Dunya listened, open-eyed, her gaze fixed on something that even Vasya could not see.
But far away there is a place where yellow flowers grow, where rising sun lights stony shore and gilds the flying foam, where all must end and all. Alyosha was cut off. The wind slammed the kitchen door open and tore shrieking through the room. Irina gave a little scream. With the wind came a black-cloaked figure, though no one saw it but Vasya. The girl caught her breath. She had seen it before. The figure gave her a single, lingering look, then reached out to lay long fingers on Dunya's throat. The old lady smiled. "I am not afraid any more," she said. Next moment, the shadow came. It fell between the black-cloaked figure and Dunya as an axe cleaves wood. "Oh, brother," said the shadow voice, "so unwary." The shadow smiled, a great black gaping smile, and seemed to reach out and seize Dunya with two vast arms. The peace on Dunya's face turned to terror. Her eyes started from her head, bulging, and her face turned scarlet. Vasya found herself on her knees, frightened, bewildered, shuddering with sobs. "What are you doing?" she shouted. "No! Let her go!" The wind roared again through the room, first a wind of winter, and then the humid, crackling wind that runs before a summer storm. But the wind died quick as it had risen, taking with it both the shadow and the black-cloaked man. "Vasya!" said Alyosha into the silence. "Vasya!" Pyotr and Konstantin rushed in, the men of the household on their heels. Pyotr was flushed with cold. He had not gone to bed after the incident in the priest's room, but set his men to patrol the sleeping village. They had all heard Vasya shouting. Vasya looked down at Dunya. Dunya was dead. Blood suffused her face, and a little foam flecked the corners of her mouth. Her eyes bulged, the dark swimming in pools of red. "She died afraid," Vasya said, very softly, shaking. "She died afraid." "Come on, Vasochka," said Alyosha. "Come down." He had tried to close Dunya's eyes, but they bulged too much. The last thing Vasya saw before she climbed off the oven was the look of horror on Dunya's dead face. Chapter 21. The Hard-Hearted Child. They laid Dunya in the bathhouse, and at dawn, the women came loud as hens cackling. They bathed Dunya's withered body, they wrapped her in linen, and sat vigil beside her. Irina knelt weeping, her head in her mother's lap. Father Konstantin knelt too, but it did not seem that he prayed. His face was white as linen. Again and again, his trembling hand felt at his unmarked throat. Vasya was not there. When the women looked for her, she was not to be found. "She has always been a hoyden," muttered one to another, "but I never thought her so bad as this." Her friend nodded darkly, mouth pinched small. Dunya had been as a mother to Vasilisa when Marina Ivanovna died. "It is in the blood," she said. "You can see it in her face. She has a witch's eyes." At first light, Vasya crept outside, a shovel over her shoulder. Her face was set. She made a few preparations, then went to find her brother. Alyosha was chopping firewood. His axe whistled down so hard that the logs burst apart and lay strewn in the snow at his feet. "Yoshka," said Vasya, "I need your help." Alyosha blinked at his sister. He had been weeping. The ice crystals glinted in his brown beard. It was very cold. "What, Vasya?" "Dunya gave us a task." The young man's jaw tightened. "This is hardly the time," he said. "Why are you here? The women are keeping vigil. You should be with them." "Last night," said Vasya urgently, "there was a dead thing in the house, an upir. Like in Dunya's stories, it came as she was dying." Alyosha was silent. Vasya met his gaze. His knuckles showed white when he drove the axe down again. "Ran the monster off, did you?" he said with some sarcasm between chops. "My little sister, all by herself?"
Dunya told me, Vasya said. She said to remember the stories. Make a stake of birchwood, she said. Remember? Please, brother.
Alyosha paused in his chopping.
What are you suggesting?
We must get rid of it. Vasya took a deep breath. We need to look for disturbed graves.
Alyosha frowned. Vasya was white to the lips, her eyes great dark holes.
Well, we will see, Alyosha said with the barest edge of irony. Let's go dig up the cemetery. Truly, it has been too long since father beat me.
He stacked his wood and hoisted his axe. It had snowed in the hour before dawn. There was nothing to be seen in the graveyard but vague hummocks beneath the sparkling drifts. Alyosha glanced at his sister.
What now?
Vasya's mouth twitched despite herself.
Dunya always said that male virgins are best for finding the undead. You walk in circles until you trip over the right grave. Care to lead, brother?
You're out of luck, I'm afraid, Vasochka, said Alyosha with some asperity, and have been for some time. Do we need to kidnap a peasant boy?
Vasya assumed a righteous expression.
Where greater virtue fails, the lesser must do its poor best, she informed him, and clambered first among the glittering graves.
In honesty, she doubted that virtue had much to do with it. The smell hung like evil rain over the graveyard, and it was not long before Vasya stopped, choking, in a familiar corner. She and Alyosha looked at each other, and her brother began to dig. The earth ought to have been stiff with frost, but it was moist and fresh tumbled. As Alyosha cleared away the snow, the smell struck up with such force that he turned away, gagging. But lips tight, he drove his shovel into the earth. In a surprisingly short time, they had uncovered the head and torso of a figure, wrapped in a winding sheet. Vasya drew out a small knife and cut the cloth away.
Mother of God, said Alyosha, and turned away.
Vasya said nothing. Little Agafya's skin was the grayish white of a corpse, but her lips were berry red, full and tender, as they had never been in life. Her eyelashes cast lacy shadows on her wasted cheeks. She might have been asleep, at peace in a bed of earth.
What do we do? Alyosha asked, very pale and breathing as little as possible.
A stake through the mouth, said Vasya. I made a stake this morning. Alyosha shuddered, but knelt. Vasya knelt beside him, hands trembling. The stake was crudely shaped, but sharp, and she hefted a large rock to do the hammering.
Well, brother, said Vasya, will you hold its head or drive in the stake?
He was white at the snowdrifts, but he said,
I'm stronger than you.
True enough, said Vasya. She handed over stake and rock and pried open the thing's jaws. The teeth, sharp as a cat's, gleamed like bone needles. The sight of them shook Alyosha out of his stupor. Gritting his teeth, he thrust the stake between the red lips and slammed the rock down. Blood spurted, welling out of the mouth and over the gray chin. The eyes flew open, huge and horrible, though the body did not stir. Alyosha's hand jerked. He missed the stake, and Vasya snatched her fingers away just in time. There was a nasty crunch as the stone shattered the right cheekbone. The thing let out a thin scream, though still it did not move. To Vasya, it seemed that a roar of fury came faintly from the woods.
Hurry, she said. Hurry, hurry!
Alyosha bit his tongue and resettled his grip. The rock had made a shapeless ruin of the face. He struck the stake again and again, sweating despite the cold. At last, the tip of the stake grated against bone, and a final, ferocious strike sent the stake out through the other side of the skull. The light went out of the corpse's open eyes, and the stone fell from Alyosha's nerveless fingers. He flung himself away, gasping. Vasya's hands dripped blood, and worse things, but she let go of Agafya almost absently. She was staring into the forest.
Vasya, what is it? Alyosha asked.
I thought I saw something, Vasya whispered. Look there. She was on her feet. A white horse and a dark rider were cantering away, swallowed almost instantly in the loom of the trees. Beyond them, it seemed she saw another figure, like a great shadow, watching.
There is no one here but us, Vasya, said Alyosha. Here, help me bury her and smooth the snow. Hurry. The women will be looking for you.
Vasya nodded and hefted the shovel. She was still frowning.
I have seen the horse before, she said to herself, and her rider, who wears a black cloak. He has blue eyes.
Vasya did not go back to the house after the upir was buried. She washed the earth and blood from her hands, went to the stable, and curled up in Mish's stall. Mish nuzzled the top of her head. The Vasila sat beside her. Vasya sat there a long time and tried to cry. For Dunya's face as she died, for the bloody ruin of Agafya. Even for Father Constantine. But though she sat a long time, the tears would not come. There was only a hollow place inside her, and a great silence. When the sun was westering, the girl joined the women in the bathhouse. All the women turned on her together.
Heedless, they said. Wild, hard-hearted.
Softer, she heard.
Witch woman, like her mother.
You are an ungrateful little thing, Vasya, gloated Anna Ivanovna. But I expected nothing better.
That evening, she bent Vasya over a stool and plied her birch switch hard, though Vasya was too old for beatings. Only Irina was silent, but she looked at her sister with a red-eyed reproach that was worse than the women's words. Vasya bore it all, but she could not summon speech in her defense. They buried Dunya at the close of day. The people whispered among themselves all through the quick, freezing funeral. Her father was haggard and gray. She had never seen him look so old.
Dunya loved you like her daughter, Vasya, he said later, of all the days to play truant.
Vasya did not speak, but she thought of her wounded hand, of the bitter, star-strewn night, of the jewel at her throat, of the upir in the dark.
Father, she said that night.
The peasants had gone back to their huts. She drew her stool up beside Pyotr's. The flames in the oven leaped red, and there was an empty space at their hearth where Dunya had been. Pyotr was making a new hilt for her hunting knife. He scraped away a little curl of wood and glanced at his daughter. In the firelight, her face was drawn.
Father, she said, I would not have disappeared without need.
She spoke so soft that in the crowded kitchen, only they too heard.
What need then, Vasya?
Pyotr laid aside his knife. He looked as though he feared her answer, Vasya realized. She bit back the jumbled confession quivering in her throat.
The upir is dead, she thought. I will not burden him more, not to salve my own pride. He must be strong for all of us.
I went to mother's grave, she said hastily. Dunya bid me go and pray for them both. She's with mother now. It was easier to pray there, in the silence. Her father looked wearier than she had ever seen him.
Very well, Vasya, he said, turning back to his hunting knife. But it was ill done to go alone and with no word. It has made talk among the people.
There was a small silence. Vasya twisted her hands together.
I am sorry, child, he added more gently. I know Dunya was as a mother to you. Did she give you anything before she died? A token? A trinket?
Vasya hesitated, caught.
Dunya said I must not tell him, but it is his gift.
She opened her mouth. There came a great thundering knock on the door, and a man burst through and fell, half frozen at their feet. Pyotr was on his feet in an instant, and the moment was lost. The winter kitchen filled with cries of astonishment.
The man's beard rattled with the ice of his breathing. His eyes stared out over mottled cheeks. He lay shivering on the floor. Pyotr knew him.
"What is it?" he demanded, stooping and catching the shuddering man by the shoulder. "What has happened, Nikolai Matveyevich?"
The man said nothing, only lay curled on the floor. When they drew off his mittens, his frozen hands were like claws.
"We'll need hot water," Vasya said.
"Get him to speak as soon as you can," said Pyotr. "His village is 2 days distant. I cannot think what disaster would bring him here at midwinter."
Vasya and Irina spent an hour rubbing the man's hands and feet and pouring hot broth down his throat. Even when his strength returned, all he would do was huddle by the oven, gasping. Finally, he took food, gulping it down, scalding hot. Pyotr bit back his impatience. At last the messenger wiped his mouth and looked fearfully at his liege lord.
"What brings you here, Nikolai Matveyevich?" demanded Pyotr.
"Pyotr Vladimirovich," the man whispered, "we are going to die."
Pyotr's face darkened.
2 nights since, our village caught fire," said Nikolai. "There is nothing left. If you do not take pity, we are all going to die. Many of us have died already."
"Fire?" said Alyosha.
"Yes," said Nikolai. "A spark fell from an oven, and the whole village went up. An ill wind was blowing, and such a wind, too warm for midwinter. We could do nothing. I left as soon as we had dug the living from the ashes. I heard them scream when the snow touched their skin. Better, perhaps, if they had died. I walked all day and all night. Such a night, with terrible voices in the wood. It seemed the screams followed me. I did not dare to stop for fear of the frost."
"It was bravely done," said Pyotr.
"Will you help us, Pyotr Vladimirovich?"
There was a long silence.
"He cannot go," thought Vasya. "Not now."
But she knew what her father would say. These were his lands, and he was their lord.
"My son and I will ride back with you tomorrow," said Pyotr heavily,
"with such men and beasts as can be spared." The messenger nodded. His eyes were far away.
"Thank you, Pyotr Vladimirovich."
The next day dawned in a dazzle of blue and white. Pyotr ordered the horses saddled at first light. The men who would not ride laced snowshoes to their feet. The winter sun shone coldly down. Great white plumes curled from the horses' nostrils like the breath of serpents, and icicles dangled from the whiskery chins. Pyotr took Buran's rein from the servant. The horse stretched out his lip and shook his head, the ice rattling in his whiskers. Kolya crouched in the snow, eye to eye with Seryozha.
"Let me come with you, father," pleaded the child. His hair fell into his eyes. He had come out leading his brown pony and wearing every garment he possessed. "I am big enough."
"You are not big enough," said Kolya, looking harried.
Irina hurried out of the house. "Come," she said, taking the child by the shoulder. "Your papa is going. Come away."
"You're only a girl," said Seryozha. "What do you know? Please, papa."
"Go back to the house," said Kolya, stern now. "Put your pony away and listen to your aunt."
But Seryozha did not. Instead, he howled and bolted, startling the horses, and disappeared behind the stable. Kolya rubbed his face.
"He'll come back when he's hungry."
He heaved himself onto his own horse's back.
"God be with you, brother," said Irina.
"And you, sister," said Kolya.
He clasped her hand and turned away. Cold leather creaked as the men put up the horses' girths and checked the bindings of their snowshoes. Their steaming breath thickened the icy bristles in their beards. Alyosha stood at the edge of the dvor, a look of thunder on his good-natured face.
"You must stay," Pyotr had said to him. "Someone must look after your sisters." "You will need me, father," he had said.
Pyotr shook his head.
"I will sleep easier if you are guarding my girls. Vasya is rash and Irina is fragile. And Lyoshka, you must keep Vasya at home for her own sake. There is an ugly mood in the village."
He
please, my son. Alyosha shook his head, wordless, but he did not ask again.
Father, said Vasya, father.
She appeared at Buran's head, face strained, her hair very black against the pale fur of her hood.
You must not go, not now.
I must, Vasochka, Pyotr said wearily. She had begged the night before. It is my place, and they are my people. Try to understand.
I understand, she said, but there is evil in the wood.
These are evil times, said Pyotr, but I am their lord.
There are dead things in the wood. The dead are walking. Father, the woods are dangerous.
Nonsense, Vasya, snapped Pyotr. Mother of God, if she started spreading such stories about the village.
Dead, said Vasya again. Father, you must not go.
Pyotr seized her shoulder, hard enough to make her flinch. All about him, his men were clustered and waiting.
You are too old for fairy tales, he growled, trying to make her see.
Fairy tales, said Vasya. It came out a strangled cry. Buran threw his head up. Pyotr got a better grip on the stallion's rein and settled the horse. Vasya flung her father's hand aside.
You saw Father Constantine's broken window, she said. You cannot leave the village. Father, please.
The men could not hear everything, but they heard enough. Their faces showed pale beneath the beards. They stared at Pyotr's daughter. More than one glanced toward his wife or his children, standing small and valiant against the snow. There would be no ruling them, Pyotr thought, if his foolish daughter kept on.
You are not a child, Vasya, to take fright at tales, Pyotr snapped.
He spoke calmly and crisply to reassure the men. Alyosha, take your sister in hand. Do not be afraid, Dochka, he said, lower and more gently. We shall win a brave victory. This winter will pass like the others. Kolya and I will come back to you. Be kind to Anna Ivanovna.
But father...
Pyotr sprang to Buran's back. Vasya's hand closed on the horse's headstall. Anyone else would have been yanked off his feet and trampled, but the stallion pricked his ears at the girl and stood.
Let go, Vasya, said Alyosha, coming up beside her.
She didn't move. He laid a hand on hers where it wrapped round the bridle and bent to whisper in her ear.
Now is not the time. The men will break. They are afraid for the houses and they are afraid of demons. Besides, if father heeds you, they will say he was ruled by his maiden daughter.
Vasya sucked a breath between her teeth, but she let go of Buran's bridle.
Better to believe me, she muttered.
Released, the brave, aging stallion reared up. The subdued men fell in behind Pyotr. Kolya saluted his brother and sister as the party trotted out into the white world, leaving the two alone in the stable yard. The village seemed very quiet when the riders had left. The icy sun shone gaily down.
I believe you, Vasya, said Alyosha.
You drove the stake in with your own hand. Of course you believe me, fool.
Vasya paced like a wolf in a cage. I should have told father everything.
But we slew the upir, said Alyosha. Vasya shook her head helplessly. She remembered the Rusalka's warning and the Leshy's.
It is not over, she said. I was warned. Beware the dead. Who warned you, Vasya?
Vasya halted in her pacing and saw her brother's face cold with faint suspicion. She knew a twist of despair so strong she laughed.
You too, Lyoshka, she said. True friends, old and wise, warned me. Do you believe the priest? Am I a witch?
You are my sister, said Alyosha very firmly, and our mother's daughter, but you should stay out of the village until father returns. The house fell gradually silent that night, as though the hush crept in with a nighttime chill. Pyotr's household huddled by the oven, to sew or carve or mend in the firelight.
What is that sound? Said Vasya suddenly.
One by one, her family fell silent.
Someone outside was crying. It was little more than a choked whimper, barely audible. But at length, there could be no doubt. They heard the muffled sound of a woman weeping. Vasya and Alyosha looked at each other. Vasya half rose. "No," Alyosha said. He went himself to the door, opened it, and looked long into the night. At last he came back, shaking his head. "There is nothing there." But the crying went on. Twice, and then three times, Alyosha went to the door. At last Vasya went herself. She thought she saw a white glimmer flitting between the peasants' huts. Then she blinked, and there was nothing. Vasya went to the oven and peered into its shining maw. The domovoy was there, hiding in the hot ash. "She cannot get in," he breathed in a crackle of flames. "I swear it, she cannot. I will not let her." "That is what you said before, but it got in then," said Vasya under her breath. "The fearful man's room is different," whispered the domovoy. "That I cannot protect. He has denied me. But here, now, that one cannot get in." The domovoy clenched his hands. "She will not get in." At length, the moon set, and they all sought their beds. Vasya and Irina huddled close together, wrapped in furs, breathing the black dark. Suddenly the sound of crying came again, very near. Both girls froze. There was a scratching at their window. Vasya glanced at Irina, who lay open-eyed and rigid beside her. "It sounds like..." "Oh, don't say it," pleaded Irina. "Don't!" Vasya rolled out of bed. Unconsciously, her hand sought the pendant between her breasts. The cold of it burned her flinching hand. The window was set high in the wall. Vasya clambered up and wrestled with the shutters. The ice in the window distorted her view of the dvor. But there was a face behind the ice. Vasya saw the eyes and mouth, great dark holes, and a bony hand pressed to the frozen pane. The thing was sobbing. "Let me in," it gasped. There was a thin screeching noise, nails on ice. Irina whimpered.
"Let me in,"
hissed the thing.
"I am cold."
Vasya lost her hold on the windowsill, fell, and landed sprawling. "No, no," she scrambled to regain the window. But all was empty now and still. The moon shone untroubled over the empty dvor.
"What was it?" whispered Irina.
"Nothing, Irinka," snapped Vasya. "Go to sleep."
She had begun to cry, but Irina could not see her. Vasya crawled back into bed and wound her arms around her sister. Irina did not speak again, but lay long awake, shivering. At last she drifted off, and Vasya put aside her sister's arms. Her tears had dried, her face was set. She went to the kitchen.
"I think we will all die if you are gone," she said to the domovoy. "The dead are walking."
The domovoy put his weary head out of the oven.
"I will hold them off as long as I can," he said. "Watch with me tonight. When you are here, I am stronger."
For 3 nights, Pyotr did not come back, and Vasya stayed in the house and kept watch with the domovoy. On the first night, she thought she heard weeping, but nothing came near the house. On the second night, there was perfect silence, and Vasya thought she would die of wishing to sleep. On the third day, she resolved to ask Alyosha to watch with her. At evening, a bloody dusk flamed up and died, leaving blue shadows and silence. The family lingered in the kitchen. The bedchamber seemed very cold and remote. Alyosha sharpened his boar spear by oven light. The leaf-shaped blade threw little dazzles onto the hearth. The fire had burned low, and the kitchen was full of red shade, when a long, low wail sounded without. Irina huddled beside the oven. Anna knitted, but all could see she was clammy and shivering. Father Constantine's eyes were so wide that the white showed in a ring. He whispered prayers under his breath. There came the sound of dragging footsteps. Nearer they came, nearer. Then a voice rattled the window.
"It is dark," said the voice. "I am cold. Open the door. Open it."
Then, tap, tap, tap on the door. Vasya rose to her feet. Alyosha's hands locked around the haft of his spear. Vasya went to the door. Her heart hammered in her throat. The domovoy was at her side, teeth clenched.
"No," Vasya managed, though her lips were numb.
She dug her fingers into the wound on her hand and laid her bloody palm flat against the door.
"I am sorry. The house is for the living."
The thing on the other side wailed. Irina buried her face in her mother's lap. Alyosha stumbled to his feet, spear in hand, but the shuffling footsteps started up, faded into nothing. They all drew breath and looked at each other. Then came the squealing of terrified horses. Without thinking, Vasya wrenched open the door, even as four voices cried out.
"Demon!" shrieked Anna. "She will let it in!"
Vasya had already run out into the night. A white shape darted among the horses, scattering them like chaff. But one horse was slower than the others. The white shape attached itself to the animal's throat and bore it down. Vasya shouted, running, forgetting fear. The dead thing looked up, hissing, and a bar of moonlight fell across its face.
"No," said Vasya, stumbling to a halt.
"Oh, no, please. Dunya! Dunya!"
"Vasya," lisped the thing.
The voice was a corpse's cracked wheeze, but it was Dunya's voice.
"Vasya."
It was she, and it was not. The bones were there, the shape and form and grave clothes, but the nose drooped, the lips had fallen in, the eyes were blazing holes, the mouth a blackened pit, blood caked in the lines of chin and nose and cheeks. Vasya wrenched together her courage. The necklace burned coldly against her breast, and she wrapped her free hand round it. The night smelled of hot blood and grave mold. She thought a dark figure stood beside her, but she did not look round to see.
"Dunya," Vasya said. She fought to keep her voice steady. "Get you gone. You have done enough evil here."
Dunya pressed a hand to her mouth. The tears sprang to her empty eyes, even as she bared her teeth. She swayed, quivered, chewed her lip. Almost it seemed she wished to speak. She started forward, snarling, and Vasya backed up, already feeling the teeth in her throat. And then the upir screeched, flung herself backward, and ran like a dog toward the woods. Vasya watched her until she was lost in the moonlight. There came a rasping breath from the horse at Vasya's feet. He was Misha's youngest, little more than a foal. She fell to her knees beside him. The colt's throat was laid open. Vasya pressed her hands to the torn place, but the black tide ran carelessly away. She felt the death as a sinking in her belly. From the stable, she heard the Vasila's anguished cry.
"No," Vasya said, "please."
But the colt lay still. The black tide slowed and stopped. A white mare stepped out of the darkness and laid her nose very gently against the dead horse. Vasya felt the mare's warm breath against her neck, but when she turned to look, there was only a little trickle of starlight. Despair and weariness were a black tide, like the horse's blood on her hands, and they swallowed Vasya whole. She held the stiffening, blood-streaked head in her arms and wept. The hour had grown old, and they should have long since gone to bed, When Alyosha came back into the winter kitchen, he was gray-faced, his clothes all spattered with blood.
"One of the horses is dead," he said heavily. "Its throat was torn away. Vasya is staying in the stable tonight. She will not be dissuaded."
"But she will freeze! She will die!" cried Irina.
Alyosha smiled faintly. "Not Vasya. You try arguing with her, Irinka."
Irina pressed her lips together, laid aside her mending, and went to heat a clay pot in the oven. No one was quite sure what she was about until she dished up milk, baked hard with old porridge, picked it up, and made for the door.
"Irinka, come back!" cried Anna.
Irina, to Alyosha's certain knowledge, had never in her life defied her mother. But this time, the girl disappeared over the threshold without a word. Alyosha cursed and went after her.
"Father was right," he thought darkly. "My sisters cannot be left alone."
It was very cold, and the dvor smelled of blood. The colt lay where he had fallen. The corpse would freeze overnight, and tomorrow was soon enough to bring the men to butcher it. The stable seemed empty when Alyosha and Irina went inside.
"Vasya," called Alyosha.
Sudden fear seized him. What if...
"Here, Lyoshka," said Vasya.
She emerged from Misha's stall, soft-footed as a cat. Irina squeaked and nearly dropped her pot.
"Are you all right, Vasochka?" she managed, tremulously.
They could not see Vasya's face, only a pale blur beneath the darkness of her hair.
"Well enough, little bird," she replied, hoarse.
"Lyoshka says you are staying in the stable tonight," said Irina.
"Yes," said Vasya, visibly gathering herself. "I must. The Vasila is afraid." Her hands were black with blood.
"If you must," said Irina very gently, as though to a beloved lunatic.
"I brought you porridge."
Clumsily, she thrust the pot at her sister. Vasya took it. The weight and the warmth seemed to steady her.
"You would do better to come in and eat it by the fire, though," said Irina. "The people will talk if you stay here."
Vasya shook her head. "It doesn't matter now." Irina's lips firmed.
"Come along," she said. "This way is better."
Alyosha watched in astonishment as Vasya let herself be led back to the house, put into her own place by the oven, and fed.
"Go to bed, Irinka," said Vasya at last.
A little color had come back into her face.
"Sleep on the oven. Alyosha and I will watch tonight."
The priest had gone. Anna was already snoring in her own chamber. Irina, who was drooping heavily, did not hesitate long. When Irina was asleep, Vasya and Alyosha looked at each other. Vasya was white as salt, with circles beneath her eyes. Her dress was streaked with a horse's blood, but food and fire had steadied her.
"What now?" said Alyosha, low. "We must watch tonight," said Vasya.
"And we must try the cemetery at dawn, and do what we can in daylight. May God be merciful."
Constantine went to the church at sunrise. He dashed across the dvor, as though the angel of death followed, barred the door to the nave, and flung himself down before the icon screen. When the sun rose and sent gray light crawling across the floor, he did not heed it. He prayed for forgiveness. He prayed the voice would come back and remove all his doubting. But all that long day the silence held perfect. It was only in the sad twilight, when there was more shadow than light on the floor of the church, that there came a voice.
"Fallen so far, my poor creature," it said.
"Twice now the she-demons have come for you, Konstantin Nikonovich. They break your window. They knock at the door."
"Yes," groaned Konstantin.
Waking and sleeping now, he saw the she-demon's face, felt her teeth in his throat.
"They know I am fallen, and so they pursue me. Have mercy, save me, I beg, forgive me, take this sin from me."
Konstantin's hands clenched together, and he bowed his face to the floor.
"Very well," said the voice mildly. "Such a little thing to ask of me, man of God. See, I am merciful. I will save you. You need not weep."
Konstantin pressed his hands to his wet face.
"But," said the voice, "I would ask something in return."
Konstantin looked up.
"Anything," he said. "I am your poor servant."
"The girl," said the voice, "the witch. All this is her fault. The people know it. They whisper among themselves. They see your eyes follow her. They say she has tempted you from grace."
Konstantin said nothing.
"Her fault. Her fault."
"I desire greatly," said the voice, "that she retire from the world. It must be sooner, not later. She has brought evil upon this house, and there can be no remedy while she is here."
"She will go south with the sledges," said Konstantin. "She will go before midwinter. Pyotr Vladimirovich has said it."
"Sooner," said the voice. "It must be sooner. There are fires and torments in store for this place. But send her away, and you can save yourself, Konstantin Nikonovich. Send her away, and you can save them all."
Konstantin hesitated. The dark seemed to breathe out a long, soft sigh.
"It will be as you say," whispered Konstantin. "I swear it."
Then the voice was gone. Konstantin was left empty, rapturous, and cold, alone on the church floor. That very afternoon, Konstantin went to Anna Ivanovna. She had taken to her bed, and her daughter brought her broth.
"You must send Vasya away now," said Konstantin.
There was sweat on his brow. His hands trembled.
"Pyotr Vladimirovich is too soft-hearted. Perhaps she will sway him. But for all our sakes, the girl must go. The demons come because of her. Did you see how she ran out into the night? She summoned them. She is not afraid. It may be that your own daughter, the little Irina, will be the next to die. Demons have appetite for more than horses."
"Irina?" Anna whispered. "You think Irina is in danger?"
She quivered with love and fear.
"I know it," said Konstantin. "Give Vasya to the people," said Anna at once. "They will stone her if you ask it. Pyotr Vladimirovich is not here to stop them."
"Better she go to a convent," said Konstantin, after the briefest hesitation. "I would not have her meet God without a chance of repentance." Anna pursed her lips. "The sledges are not ready. Better she dies. I will not see my Irina hurt." "The first two sledges are ready," replied Konstantin. "There are men enough. A few would be more than willing to take her away from here. I will arrange it. Pyotr can go see his daughter if he wishes, after she is safe in Moscow. He will not be angry when he knows the whole of it. All will be well. Do you be quiet and pray."
"You know best, Batyushka," said Anna peevishly. "Such care," she thought, "and all for that green-eyed demon spawn. But he is wise. He knows she cannot stay, corrupting good Christians."
"You are merciful, but I will see the girl dead before my Irina is put in danger."
It was all arranged. Oleg, rough and old, would drive the sledge, and Timofey's parents, their hearths empty without their dead son, would be Vasya's servants and guards.
"Of course we will do it, Batyushka," said Yasna, Timofey's mother. "God has turned his face from us, and that demon child is the reason. If she had been sent away sooner, I would never have lost my child."
"Here is rope," said Konstantin. "Bind her hands, lest she forget herself."
In his mind, he saw the heart brought down in the hunt, feet tied, the eye bewildered, trailing blood in the snow. He knew a twist of lust and shame and satisfied pride.
Tomorrow.
On the morrow, she would go. half a moon's turning before midwinter. Chapter 22 Snowdrops. That night, Anna Ivanovna called Vasya to her.
Vasochka!
Anna shrilled, making the girl jump.
Vasochka, come here!
Vasya glanced up, haggard in the firelight. She and Alyosha had gone to the cemetery at sunrise, but when they dug flinchingly into Dunya's grave, they found it empty. They had stared at each other across the bare, cold earth. Alyosha shocked. Vasya grimly unsurprised.
This cannot be, said Alyosha.
Vasya had taken a deep breath. But it is, she said. Come. We must protect the house. Cold and exhausted, they smoothed the snow and came home. The women cut up the colt to stew his flesh in their ovens and eat it with withered carrots, and Vasya hid herself, vomiting until there was nothing left in her stomach. Now it was the cusp of night, and Dunya would come again to torment them with sobbing. Father was still gone, and Vasya was sick with dread. She went reluctantly to where Anna sat. A small wooden chest, bound with strips of bronze, sat beside her.
Open it,
Anna urged. Vasya looked a question at her brother. Alyosha shrugged. She knelt before the chest and lifted the lid. Inside lay fabric, a great folded length of handsome undyed linen.
Linen? Said Vasya, bewildered.
Linen enough for a dozen shirts.
Do you intend for me to sew all winter, Anna Ivanovna?
Anna smiled despite herself.
Of course not. It is an altar cloth. You will hem it and present it to your abbess.
Seeing Vasya still puzzled, she added, smiling more widely still, You are going south to a convent in the morning. For a moment, Vasya was lightheaded, and blackness darted before her eyes. She stumbled to her feet.
Does father know?
Oh, yes, said Anna. You were to be sent away with the tribute goods. But we have had enough of you summoning devils. You will go at dawn. The men are ready, and the woman to see to your virtue. Anna smirked.
Pyotr Vladimirovich would have it so. Perhaps the holy sisters can make you obey where I could not.
Irina looked troubled and said nothing. Vasya was trembling all over.
Stepmother, no.
Anna's smile slipped.
Defy me? It is done, and you will be bound with ropes if you do not care to walk.
Come, Alyosha broke in. What madness is this? Father is from home and he would never countenance.
Would he not? Said Constantine.
Now as ever, his soft, deep voice caught and held the room. It filled the walls and the dark space near the rafters. Everyone fell silent. Vasya saw the domovoy cowering deep in the oven.
He has given it his countenance. A life among holy sisters might save her soul. She is not safe in this village where she has wronged so many. They call you witch, Vasilisa Petrovna, don't you know? They call you demon. You will be stoned before this evil winter ends if you do not go.
Even Alyosha was silent. But Vasya spoke, hoarse as a raven.
No, she said. Not now, and not ever. I have wronged no one. I will never set foot in a convent. Not if I have to live in the forest and beg work from Baba Yaga.
This is not a fairy tale, Vasya, Anna broke in shrilly.
No one is asking your opinion. It is for your own good.
Vasya thought of the wavering domovoy, of the dead things creeping about the house, of disaster narrowly averted.
But what have I done? She demanded.
She was horrified to find tears in her eyes.
I have hurt no one. I have tried to save you. Father!
She turned to Constantine.
I saved you from the Rusalka when she would have had you by the lake. I drove off the dead. Or I tried...
She stopped, choking, fighting for air.
You? Breathed Anna.
Drive them off? You invited your demon cohort in. You have brought all our misfortunes upon us. You think I haven't seen?